So I am a departure from the other presentations in that this isn't about treatment outcomes, but I think it's very useful for people who are interested in looking into different treatments. So I'd first like to thank my co-author, Dr. Connell, who's my mentor, one of my mentors at Yale. I have no relationships to disclose. We're required to say this. But moving on, so I was hoping that someone else would talk about this, but I kept this sparse, so I'll go, if I'm missing something, I think everyone in this room knows that adolescence is a critical developmental period during which multiple risk behaviors emerge. Rates of alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use begin to escalate during this time period. And adolescent substance use predisposes youth to numerous physical, social, and mental health problems during, you know, going from early to mid to late adolescence, and then also in emerging adulthood. We also know that alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use significantly increases the likelihood of engaging in risky sexual behavior. And particularly what the literature has shown is that rates of alcohol use are related to increases, alcohol use and other drugs, but it's related to increases in the number of sexual partners, earlier initiation of sex, regretful sexual acts, and decreases in condom use. So for this study, I used latent class analysis. And what's interesting about latent class analysis is that compared to variable-centered methods, so such as regressions, latent class analysis uses multiple indicators, and it takes the response probabilities to those questions to assign respondents to a particular class. It is very similar to cluster analysis. That's the question that people always ask. But there are different ways that you can specify the model. So it has more of a structural piece underlying it so that it's similar to structural equation modeling. But it's instead of a continuous latent variable, you have categories. So as it says here, it's used to identify homogeneous subgroups within a heterogeneous population. So my research questions were, are latent classes of substance use different between African Americans and Caucasian Americans? And similarly, are there differences in sexual risk behavior classes? Now, a lot of work has been done where race is used as a covariate in analyses. And so people have identified substance use and sexual risk behavior classes. However, one of my major concerns with this is that if you have a sample, since it's person-centered, if you have a sample that's 60% from one group, the latent classes that are derived, because it's data-driven, are then based upon that group that's the majority of the sample. And when you use race as a covariate, you're then predicting, say, African-Americans or Hispanics to classes that were designated from a predominantly majority or Caucasian sample. So that's the premise for going forward with this. Also, we know that high-risk behaviors tend to co-occur. And so there's been a lot of cluster analyses where people have lumped, say, mental health, sexual risk behaviors, and ATOD use into the same model. When you get those sort of, you know, 8 and 10 different clusters that come about, it gets complicated. And then you can't compare across studies because people use different questions. And I've already given the second bullet about using race as a covariate. So for the methods, I utilized the 2005 Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance Survey. And of course, I think most people in the room know that this is a national survey sponsored by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It includes 95 items that cover a range of domains, including substance use, sexual behavior, and other health-compromising behaviors. I had 3,337 African-American adolescents from the 2005 sample and 6,116 Caucasian-American adolescents. And of course, these are students. This is a school-based sample for people who are in 9th through 12th grade. The measures that I used, one thing that I didn't mention is that a lot of previous studies, latent class studies, looking at substance use have either looked at ever use or they've looked at frequency separately. So I've combined frequency as well as whether they've ever used. And so for alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, and binge drinking, the categories were never used, no recent use, infrequent recent use, and frequent recent use. So infrequent was 1 to 5 days, and frequent use was 6 or more days. For cocaine use, because the response probabilities were so low, and latent class uses chi-squares, so when you have that sort of complicated table, you can't have sparseness in your data, so I had to collapse for cocaine use, such that I had categories of never use, no recent use, and of course recent use. And then for inhaling and other hard drug use, it was just a question of whether they had never or ever used. For sexual risk behavior, we included the age of first sexual intercourse, and so the options were never had intercourse, and then there was individual options for each age, 11 to 16, and then a category for 17 or older. Number of sexual partners, similarly categorized with never had intercourse, 1 through 5, and then a category for 6 or more partners. Recent partners for the past 3 months, again, never had intercourse, no recent intercourse in the past 3 months, and then 1 to 5 and 6 or more. Condom use during last sexual intercourse, never had, yes, no, and history of HIV testing, never, ever, and I don't know if I've had an HIV test. So latent class analysis is actually very similar to factor analysis in the sense of you have to have, you run a series of successive models ranging from 1 to however many number of classes, and we used several fit indices, and I won't go into the details or the technical aspects of those. But what's most important is that you have substantive interpretability. So if you have a solution of 7 or 8 or 9 classes and there's no way for you to, you know, interpret or understand what those mean, then that's not very useful. It's not going to add anything to the body of literature. I also like to indicate, and I don't discuss this here because of the level of complexity that I'm already going to present. We controlled for age and gender, and latent class analysis gives you odds ratios for that, but I won't be presenting that. Just know that for African Americans and Caucasian Americans, there weren't any, you know, hugely significantly different findings in the sense of older age was associated with increased substance use, increased sexual risk behavior, and then similar gender differences were found between the two groups. So it wasn't anything life-shattering. I'm going to present the results separately for ATOD use because this is where there were some very stark differences and some very important differences. First, I have to tell you that when I use the language unrestricted, so I say this is a five-class unrestricted solution. For both ATOD use and sexual risk behavior, we were able to restrict the model structurally to say there's a group of people who have never used anything. And so unrestricted means the restricted model where I had a forced abstainers group did not work. So we had to go with an unrestricted model. And that was due to the fact that for tobacco use, the question is phrased to say, have you ever smoked a cigarette, even 1 or 2 puffs? So you couldn't classify people into never using because of that one question, the way they worded it. So for African Americans, there was a 30% of them were classified as low users, so they had never used anything else, but a small proportion of them had ever smoked 1 or 2 puffs of cigarettes. There were alcohol experimenters, which were 33% of the group. These folks had a low probability of tobacco or marijuana use, some alcohol use, and low binge drinking. And actually, I'll keep reading these to you, but I'll go to the picture because that's more impactful. So what I have here are the five classes are defined. The low users, alcohol experimenters. So we have the low users, alcohol experimenters, and the prevalence rates for each group are shown here. And what you can see, given these codings here, is that for low users, you can see they've never used, and you can see that most of the chart is green. And then when we used to go to alcohol experimenters, they haven't particularly used tobacco or marijuana, but there's significant alcohol use, both binge drinking, and just regular having drinks, but they haven't done it recently. And so you can see as the red increases, this is where you get to the frequent polysubstance users, and these are people who are reporting using these substances 6 or more times in the past month. So the picture is much more impactful so that you can see how the behaviors begin to range. So for the polysubstance experimenters, these people have a low probability of recent use but report ever use of tobacco, alcohol, and marijuana. For occasional polysubstance users, there's a high probability of recent alcohol use, moderate probability of recent marijuana use, and or tobacco use. And then obviously, the frequent polysubstance use folks, there's a moderate to high probability of using all of the substances that are listed here. I don't have the cocaine and the hard drug and inhalant use, but a significant proportion of frequent polysubstance users, 30% to 50% of them had ever used cocaine, inhalants, and hard drugs. Obviously, because the coding is different, it's hard to put that, you know, add that to the picture. For all the other groups, It was very low probability of folks reporting using hard drugs and inhalants. So I'm showing these separately because the point here is that you really can't group them together because the solutions are actually very different, and this is important information to know for treatment purposes. So there was a sixth class unrestricted solution for Caucasian Americans. And the non-users or low users, alcohol experimenters, and polysubstance use, those actually look very similar to the African Americans. And where you start to see differences are when we get to this binge drinking polysubstance, frequent poly and hard drug use class. So I'm going to go again to the picture, which is even a little bit more complicated because we have six classes here. So again, the same information is down there with the prevalence rates within the population for these different groupings. For the binge drinking polysubstance use, this is very concerning. You see that 100% of these folks report using alcohol six or more days in the past month. You have binge drinking at very, you know, high rates. Just about everyone has binge drank in the past month. So it ranges from 1 to 6 or more days. The orange, where's my pointer? The orange is 1 to 5 days, and then the red is 6 or more days in the past month of binge drinking, which was defined as 5 or more drinks in one sitting. So you can see how this is a completely sort of different solution for Caucasian Americans in that alcohol use is much more salient in poly drug use for this group. Similarly, for frequent polysubstance use, it was the same sort of picture of, you know, across the board using multiple substances. What's interesting, and they're over here kind of because, and I didn't put this in the discussion slide, but I'll say it here. Both of the solutions had sort of a staged sequential design. You know, you guys are probably familiar with the gateway hypothesis. Because it's cross-sectional, I can't say that for a fact people are using from one to the other. But you can see the continuum here of low use to alcohol experimentation, to polysubstance use, so on and so forth. But there's this class, this hard drug use class that I named them. And it's not presented here. The reason why I named them that is because 30 to 50% of them reported ever use of cocaine, inhalants, and other hard drugs, but they don't have recent use. So these are perhaps people who've been in treatment and who are now ex-users, but it was very interesting that they had they reported ever use of just about everything. See how low the never users are here, and so they've ever used everything, but they haven't recently used these substances. So they were kind of hard for me to categorize and put into the continuum here. So any suggestions about that or any ideas, I'd love to hear them. For the sexual risk behavior solution, that was a little, that was actually very interesting. It was a similar solution. Statistically speaking, there were differences because of the prevalence. So going back to the analogy with structural equation modeling, if any of you are familiar with that, in structural equation modeling, you can say that the variables that are indicating your latent variable can be the same across groups, but then you can start saying the factor loadings are different. And so in this case, what's different is the prevalence rates for these five classes. So we have a five-class restricted solution. The prevalence rates for these classes are very different between the groups, and I'll go through that. And additionally, the way that each of these groups was defined, the response probabilities were different there. So there's like some measurement as well as prevalence rates differences between Caucasian Americans and African Americans. The five classes were abstainers, monogamous, low frequency multi-partner, moderate frequency multi-partner, and high frequency multi-partner. So obviously abstainers, you know, again, this is the restricted one. So these are people who've never had sexual intercourse. We allowed whether or not they had HIV testing to vary because there were instances where people had never had sex, but they reported yes, it was very low prevalence, but they said yes, they had had an HIV test. And of course that could be related to if they've had some sort of blood transfusion or something. We can't know, you know, why they had an HIV test. Monogamous were those persons, they had a later age of initiation, so they started sexual intercourse around 15 to 17 or older, and they reported 1 to 2 lifetime partners and either no recent partners or one recent partner. The low frequency multi-partner, again, moderate age of initiation, so say 12 to 17, and then they had up to 3 lifetime partners and maybe 1 or 2 recent partners. Again, so it continues in that fashion with moderate and then the high-frequency multi-partners. What's crucial here, the key differences are that If you look at the abstainers, 31.7% of African American adolescents were abstainers compared to 58% of Caucasian Americans. And that's something that's been borne out in the literature with sexual misbehavior of African American adolescents. But to see it in this way was, you know, more shocking for me. Similarly, for the high-frequency multi-partner, 18.6% of African-American adolescents compared to 5.7% of Caucasian-American adolescents. Within the high-frequency multi-partner group, African-Americans had a higher probability of lower age of initiation. So when I look at the tables of that, 50% of African-Americans in that high-risk group reported having sex at ages 11 or 12 years old, compared to only 32% of Caucasian Americans in that high-risk group reported sexual initiation at 11 or 12 years old. So there were, you know, again, prevalence rate differences as well as response probability differences. So just to kind of draw that all together, substance use patterns more readily include marijuana among African Americans. The probability of marijuana use began to increase with the alcohol experimenters for them. A significant proportion engaged in sexual risk behavior, and the models identify an opportunity to target especially at-risk groups regarding substance use and sexual risk behavior separately. Caucasian Americans, alcohol use was a prominent feature of substance use patterns. I think that was clear to everyone here in that picture. That represents a clear target for prevention work. It also raises an interesting point for me in that most of the literature using variable-centered things where they used race as a covariate, alcohol has always been, you know, a prominent sort of substance use, and so then it leads the question of, do we need to revisit some of the previous work in the sense of maybe we need to start culling out separately and looking at, you know, the heterogeneity within groups, because I think this is an impetus that there are clear differences, and perhaps using race as a covariate isn't the best way of going about modeling these very, very important adolescent behaviors. So the limitations of the work were that this was self-report, obviously. It is cross-sectional. There are a lot of implications for longitudinal work, and I have that on my future direction slide, which is coming up next. And finally, of course, this was a school-based sample. We know that institutionalized adolescents, adolescents who are homeless, they're going to have higher prevalence rates, more concerning issues with, you know, their sort of behaviors that they're engaging in. Finally, the reason why I had these two behaviors, alcohol, tobacco use, and sexual risk behavior are two things that, you know, have continued to be of great public health importance. I plan on running a joint model of the ATOD and sexual risk behavior patterns separately for Caucasians and African Americans, as well as for Hispanics, but in the interest of time, I couldn't present all of those different comparisons here. And the models take 20 days to run sometimes, so that's a challenge there. I also want to incorporate more health-compromising behaviors and identification of particularly at-risk adolescent subpopulations, so those persons who are engaging in basically comorbidity studies, looking at specifically what the behaviors are that identify at-risk adolescents. And finally, we do need longitudinal research to evaluate a model of sequential behaviors. Given what's been done previously, I'm thinking that the low use to the alcohol experimenters, that there will be a longitudinal trajectory with that, as well as the fact that escalating sexual risk behavior would occur. As it pertains to African Americans, I am also concerned with the fact that preliminary analyses have shown us that regardless of substance use class, because you would think increased substance use, increased sexual risk behavior, regardless of substance use classes, African Americans are engaging in sexual risk behavior at higher rates. So I'm interested in looking at covariates that are related to that and trying to understand why substance use isn't as that salient for the sexual risk behaviors there. Thank you.